I'm going to give this to you unvarnished, straightforward, full on. I'm very excited with my topic. It's one of my favorite things to teach. Of all the things that I teach, honestly, I think it's what changes people's lives more than anything else. I'm basically going to be using Aristotle and St. Thomas Aquinas. I'm going to begin by telling you something from Aristotle. What we're going to be looking at is a major theme in moral philosophy. Aristotle at one point says, why study moral philosophy? And his answer is interesting. You don't study moral philosophy simply or fundamentally for the sake of learning something. He says the end of studying moral philosophy or ethics is not knowledge. The end of studying moral philosophy or ethics is action. He, in fact, rather pointedly says at the beginning of the Nicomachean Ethics, there is really no reason to study ethics unless you are studying it so as to change your life. Why else would one study ethics? It's not just an exercise in, well, here's how some people have thought that perhaps we should live, in Aristotle's mind, in any case. It's a matter of certain truths of how we should live if we are going to be what by nature we should be. So in any case, I tell you right up front that I'm going to be presenting you the thoughts of Aristotle and St. Thomas. I'm also going to be very direct. I think they have much that we would do well to listen to, and that's precisely why I'm happy to share it with you. So the topic that we have before us is a fascinating one, and I've framed it as the role of human friendship in Christianity or in the spiritual life. So basically, taking for granted that one is a Christian, how important is it or not to have friendship in one's life? Now, normally, I'm a philosopher. Normally, when I lecture on friendship, I'm pretty much just using Aristotle straight up, and I'm not actually connecting it to Christianity, though I'm very happy to do so, as I think it's a deeply important part of Christianity that is not that often brought out. And so I'm going to use as my teacher here, St. Thomas Aquinas, great teacher of the church, and he himself very closely follows Aristotle. So I'll tell you right off the bat, if you ask Aristotle, is friendship necessary in the good human life? His answer is very direct. Fundamentally, he is willing to equate living in true friendship and the good human life. Not only is it necessary, in a sense, they are the same thing. Show me a successful, good, flourishing human life, and that is a human life that is being lived in true friendship or virtuous friendship. There really isn't human happiness outside of that for Aristotle. So how does that get folded into Christianity? I'm basically going to address a little bit how St. Thomas directly does that. But just so you know, my main goal here is hopefully to give you a few reflections, a few principles that you could use, bearing in mind Aristotle's point of why one studies moral philosophy anyway. I want to have an eye towards exactly what that teacher says. How can we take these things and apply it to our life? So here is here's my thesis for the lecture, by God's providential design. And when I say providential design, for St. Thomas, a providential design is always the result of love. So if it's a providential design, it's a design of love. By God's providential design, virtuous friendship is an essential help on the road to holiness, as well as a constitutive element of happiness in this life. So I'll say that again. Virtuous friendship is an essential help on the road to holiness, as well as a constitutive element of happiness in this life. Now, let me go ahead and point out something right off the bat, and have a quotation sheet for you there. If you you do not have to follow along, but it might be nice for you. Let's go ahead, and I'm gonna read you the second quotation, which is going to kind of give us our charter here for the lecture. This is in the first part. The second part of St. Thomas's Summa of Theology. He asked the question here, is the fellowship of friends necessary for happiness? If you've had any experience with studying Thomas Aquinas, he always makes certain distinctions. It depends on how you mean that. So he has to make certain distinctions in order to answer the question directly. So is the fellowship of friends necessary for happiness? He's very careful. I'm going to read you the body of the article. It's a mini masterpiece. I'm going to read it to you, and we'll end up looking at a couple different parts of it. I answer that. If we speak of happiness of this life, the happy man needs friends. As the philosopher, you might know that's his nickname for Aristotle. As Aristotle says in Ethics 9:9, not indeed does that happy man need friends to make use of them, since he suffices for himself, nor to delight in them, since he possesses perfect delight in the operation of virtue, but for the purpose of a good operation, namely, that he may do good to them, that he may delight in seeing them do good, and again, that he may be helped by them in his good work. For in order that man may do well, whether in the works of the active life or in those of the contemplative life, he needs the fellowship of friends. So I'm going to come back to that moment. That's going to be our focus, but let's just go ahead and see how he, always making the appropriate distinctions, goes on and says this. But if we speak of perfect happiness, which will be in our heavenly fatherland, the fellowship of friends is not essential to happiness, since man has the entire fullness of his perfection in God. That's a very bold and strong statement there. He says the fellowship of friends, of course, left in ellipsis there is the term human. So what he's saying is to understand clearly, in heaven, you would not absolutely need to have any other human being. Given how God has designed us and that to which he calls us, you would be happy in heaven were God and you. Nonetheless, he goes on, but the fellowship of friends conduces to the well-being of happiness. Hence, Augustine says that the spiritual creatures receive no other interior aid to happiness than the eternity, truth, and charity of the Creator. But if they can be said to be helped from without, perhaps it's only this. It is only by this that they see one another and rejoice in God at their fellowship. I'm going to circle back at the end and say another word about that, but just note, even there, note how St. Thomas has divided things out very interestingly. As regards to this life, he follows Aristotle. You need to have the fellowship of friends, and that's what we're going to look at. As regards heaven, absolutely speaking, you don't have to have human friends. Nonetheless, you are going to have human friends, and it will be a part of the beautiful overflow of the happiness of heaven. But put this down here. The ways that he breaks out how we need friendship in this life is what I am going to focus on. Before we do that, I just want to give one more introductory point about friendship, and that is this. I'm going to give you my main practical suggestion beforehand. Friendship is a masterpiece. And as every masterpiece, it never comes about by accident. If anyone succeeds in having true friendship, it is always because that person has made it the object of intention. So I'm very much going to suggest taking a highly intentional approach. So my point here is to hopefully give a few principles that will give you the basis to be able to be intentional about trying to bring about that masterpiece. All right, so our overall plan. We need human friends, says St. Thomas, in this life. And then he divides that in two. First of all, for their help in living the good life. And then secondly, I'm going to use this clause of his, in order to delight in them. So let me just begin by making this fascinating distinction here for you. What he is saying here, and he's following Aristotle directly on this. Aristotle at one point says, does the happy man need friends? When Aristotle asked that question in Nicomachean Ethics, what he means by that is this. For Aristotle, you always have to remember, happiness is in virtue. One of the foundational things of Aristotle's worldview, one of the most beautiful insights he has into human nature, is that human happiness is in living virtuously. Virtue literally constitutes what human happiness is. And so, for Aristotle, to become yourself, you need to become virtuous. Incredibly beautiful point, that you are not you unless and until you become virtuous. The world will never know you for who you really are. No one can know you for who you really are unless and until you become virtuous, which is in your own particular way, by the way, following certain essential things that are there in any virtue. But in your own particular way, that is who you most of all are. So happiness will be in being virtuous. So given that that is Aristotle's view, it's very dramatic when then later on in the Nicomachean Ethics, he asks this question, does the happy man need friends? Really what he's saying there is, does the happy man still need friends? Given all the argument that he has made, that the truly virtuous man is someone that has become himself. He has become what a human being was to be. What can he be happy there simply in that? And he definitively argues, no, you cannot be happy even had you all other goods, says Aristotle. You would not ever choose to live without friendship. And so for Aristotle, what we need to see is you need friendship both in order to become virtuous, in order to grow in virtue, and then even once you are that person that you're to be, once you are virtuous, then even then happiness will still be constituted by living out that virtue with your virtuous friend. And so that's the division here when he says, when St. Thomas said, he was following Aristotle on this, when he said, do you need friendship in order to be happy? First of all, he points out with Aristotle, if you're ever going to become virtuous, you needed to have friends. So you need to have your friends in order to grow in virtue. And then, even given that you've now become virtuous, at that point, you still need to have friends. And that's what's being captured by this line, in order to delight in them. And we'll come back to that and take a look at that in a few minutes. Then I'm going to wrap up with just a few thoughts then on friendship with God based upon those principles. Quick definition for you of true friendship, which is also called virtuous friendship. Two people with reciprocal and recognized goodwill for each other who seek to live one good life together. So two people who have reciprocal and recognized goodwill. Based in that, then they seek to live literally one life together. A very, very beautiful notion of the actual friendship itself is most of all instantiated in these two people living one life. Note, it must be, to be true friendship, it must be one life in virtue. Quick side point, just so you know, Aristotle is the master of distinguishing how there are many different kinds of friendship. For you name the thing that can be reasonably called a friendship, Aristotle has talked about it and pointed out and made the appropriate distinctions. It's really astounding. But that said, he has a laser focus on there is one kind of friendship where most of all human life is lived. Any human life is going to have a kind of panoply of relationships in it. And then among those relationships, a number of which, in different ways, will be called friends. But central to Aristotle's view here is there is a very small number of people with whom you can live true friendship, full friendship, what he also calls, again, virtuous friendship. And it's that my focus is on here. So the point here, ladies and gentlemen, is not to be saying this kind of friendship, Aristotle saying, needs to be had with everybody by any stretch of the imagination or even a large number of people. In fact, he's very specific that it can only be had with a very small number of people. Nonetheless, therein, most of all, will your life be lived. so he holds. So that is our focus. So a couple thoughts here on how friends are necessary for both the active life and the contemplative life. I'm going to focus on the active life because that's what most of us are concerned with. And really, when Aristotle and St. Thomas says here that friendship is necessary for the active life, what he means is friendship is necessary in order to grow in the moral virtues. So, moral virtues for Aristotle are an extremely arduous good to achieve. And the main means, we might say, through which, in Aristotle's mind, St. Thomas's mind, one would be able to do that would be precisely through having good friends. So there's a number of ways that we could approach that, but I'm going to focus in on what I think is a central point of how that actually happens, which is very practical, and I think gives a great mind insight into the mind of Aristotle. We know, especially from experience, and this is the thing, Aristotle, St. Thomas, one of the things that is so beautiful about them as thinkers is that it's so clear that they are simply docile to reality. They're not lost in abstractions. They're always focusing on human life. And what is very clear in day-to-day human life, that when you see good people becoming good, what the context that they're doing it in is others who are helping them right there at their side. Obviously, there's a number of different helps that we need. You can talk about how you need mentors or teachers who are kind of above you. But clearly, experience shows that the key in becoming ourselves is that good friend who is at our side encouraging us along. So the way that I'd like to capture that is with the phrase, holding one another accountable. An incredibly practical aspect of true friendship is that the two friends, quote, hold one another accountable. True friends are the experts at holding one another accountable. Just think for a moment, given what true friendship is, and I know I can't begin by giving all of Aristotle's points on the different aspects of it. Hopefully, as we go, they'll just kind of come out. But when we can see it, particularly here, in this beautiful aspect of who else can we count on to hold us to be ourselves than someone that we know sees us for who we are and loves us for who we are. Those are the two key characteristics that Aristotle says of true friendship that particularly sets it apart. Really see the other for who he is, and based upon that insight in the other for who he is, loving that other in an unselfish way. So note the practicality of what other context could possibly compare with where two human beings see one another for who they are, love one another for who they are, and in that context can say to one another at the appropriate moments, you are falling short of being yourself. There's very few people that would be capable of doing that for us. There's very few people, frankly, that we would be willing to hear it from. So I'm gonna have, as we go, a couple of suggestions I think are the particular, if you are interested, takeaway points from what they're saying. And one of them would be that looking for true friends fundamentally is looking for someone whom we can trust to hold us accountable. Where is the person that I can entrust myself to, knowing that that person knows what's best for me and truly wants what's best for me and will bring me to it? I'm absolutely convinced that this is why Aristotle is himself convinced that the only way really to grow in virtue is through true friendship. I think it's particularly that characteristic there of the holding one another accountable. I'm going to read for you right now a quotation on fraternal correction from St. Alarid. St. Alarid wrote the most important work in the Middle Ages called Spiritual Friendship. Interestingly, he did not have Aristotle on hand to read, as just a little while later St. Thomas Aquinas would. St. Alarid had read Cicero, among other ancients, but they had very many very similar positions. Listen to this beautiful, simple description of St. Alarid of how friends would correct one another. And by the way, how it can be misdone. Indeed, I have observed that in reproving friends, some people hide their growing bitterness and overflowing rage under the cloak of zeal or frankness. As a result, because not reason but passion has led them on, such correction has done more harm than good. But there's no excuse for this fault among friends. Pause. I mean, I don't know about you. As soon as I read that, I thought, oh my goodness, this is incredible. I mean, talk about doing a little examination of conscience. I'll speak for myself. How many times have I set forth to correct somebody where, to be honest, I wasn't really acting out of a deep concern for that person? It really was a little bit more of taking an opportunity to score a point, might be a little bit of a strong way of putting it, but you know, to kind of establish certain supremacy. But it can be so easily cloaked under, I'm here to help you. And so note the subtle attentiveness to this is hard, but this is something that's commonly done. This is what he's just referred to there. But there's no excuse for this fault among friends. A friend should sympathize with and make allowance for a friend. He should consider his friend's fault as his own. He should correct his friend with humility and compassion. His face and voice should show sadness and disappointment, with sobs interrupting his words. Watch this. Sometimes medievals are accused of like not being attentive to the more kind of emotional and intensely personal aspects. Watch this sentence. His friend should not only see, but feel that the correction comes not out of rancor, but out of love. Isn't that gorgeous? You should feel that this correction is coming from love. Perhaps if your friend rejects the first correction, he will welcome a second. Meanwhile, beg him earnestly, your face the picture of sadness, every word reflecting your affection. In any case, I've never seen such a beautiful description. When you hear that, you think, wow, what it takes to find one of those that can do that with me. What does it require of me to be in a position to do that? Note how, again, I think that particularly brings out the central aspect of friends need friends in order to become themselves, to grow in virtue. I turn to the contemplative life. Remember, he said, okay, we'll need friends to grow in virtue, to grow in the active life. We're also going to need them in the contemplative life. I'm going to be very, very brief here. I'm basically just going to assert this. Adverts to the fact that if we're really going to grow in wisdom, which is what the contemplative life is about, we're going to need friends. We're going to need true friendship. And I'm not talking about wisdom. There's a very important distinction between wisdom and academic excellence. I'm all for academic excellence. Academic prowess, ladies and gentlemen, is practically a dime a dozen. Wisdom is not. You can be outstanding in your academic accomplishment and not have, frankly, any true friends. Show me a man who's wise. And this is someone who's seeking wisdom in virtuous friendships. It, again, do I have a particular argument here? I'm just going to invert, as I think they would, to experience. By kind of putting it that way, I understand someone could say, well, I'll prove it. Show me a man who's wise, and I'll show you a man who has true friendship. Wisdom, again, is an arduous good. And is achieved by people who have rolled up their sleeves in this amazing relationship of being able to work together in an astoundingly effective, deeply human way. On that, I'm just going to read you. If you haven't ever read the sermon of St. Gregory Nazianzen about his relationship with St. Basil, look it up. Fasten your seatbelts and be ready to be inspired. I've just lifted two or three sentences out of it, And it's, I'm skipping the one that went with the last section there. I'll just read it from St. Thomas. It's characteristic of virtuous men that they neither sin themselves nor allow their friends to commit sins. You might look at that and say, well, that's quaint. That's cute. I mean, come on, let's get real. Is this, does this ever happen? I just suggest consider the formal point involved. He's well aware of the fact that there's no one who's without sin, but he's just pointing out the goal is to be growing in virtue. The goal is to be avoiding bad actions. And the one who is intent upon that not only is striving with himself, but is also striving with his friends. But now I go on to the quotation from St. Gregory on pursuing wisdom together. Quote, "The same hope inspired us, the pursuit of learning. This is an ambition especially subject to envy." Visit any university, and that's, you'll see the obviousness of that point. "Yet between us there was no envy. On the contrary, we made capital out of our rivalry. Our rivalry consisted not in seeking the first place for oneself, but in yielding it to the other, for we each looked on the other's success as his own." So, there in the words of St. Gregory, in his relationship with St. Basil, to illustrate this, in seeking wisdom, we do so with our friends. I now turn to the second aspect of how we need to have friends. Aristotle said you need, St. Thomas said you need them in order to grow in the active life and in the contemplative life. And then also, this now this other part of even if you've already become fully yourself. And here we have an incredibly neat insight into what the full flourishing or human happiness looks like. And again, here, this is one of these moments where it takes a certain insight into human nature. I say, this is what sets apart these great minds. They're such observers of human life. Show me the successful, the flourishing human life, and it's not just a vivere, it's a convivere. It always will be one where it's not just this person living well, but it's that to really be itself, it must be shared with another. And this is what's captured under, they need friends in order to delight in them. One of the things that St. Thomas particularly emphasizes when he gives this argument, but he's lifting it directly from Aristotle, is this. He says, you can especially see the actions of your friends better than you can see your own. At least in certain ways, you can see the actions, you can observe the actions of your friend better than you can your own. But your friend is another self, and so his actions are your own. And so human happiness is in not just having your own good actions in the sense of the ones that you do, but human happiness in its completeness will be to have your own and your other selves' actions in which you delight, both of them together. I'd like to just give one, as an abstract point that maybe we kind of think, I guess I can kind of see that. I'd like to try to put a little flesh on that bones for you, if I may, by using an example that I use in the classroom of one of my favorite virtues that Aristotle talks about, and that is, very quickly, it's actually the virtue called friendliness, which is not the same thing as having friendship. And in Aristotle's understanding of friendliness, it's basically the person who has this virtue always in social circumstances will be looking to see how, through his words, he might raise the level and meet the needs of people around him. An incredibly beautiful, simple little virtue. So I like to give the example of that to my students as picture going into a party, you know, how particularly at a college party, they're archetypically awkward, right? And we tend to want to go towards the people that we're super comfortable with. We're not particularly looking out for other people. We're more trying to take care of ourselves when we go into these circumstances. So I'd like to say, here's an example of the virtue of friendliness. Someone who goes into that group, goes into this room, goes into this party, and what's he scanning for immediately? He's scanning to see who needs someone to talk to. And he goes, and he comes over and he starts to talk to that person. And it's so natural, the person would never in the world suspect that it in any way was a project or something like that. It's truly coming from who the person is. There's just a little example of a virtuous action. Now, what Aristotle has said, you can observe and enjoy the actions of your friends better than you can your own. So I simply, maybe this is a little corny, if it is, I apologize, but here's my example, and I like it, and I'm sure, and that's why I share it with you. I like to think two friends, they're going to the same party, they get there two different times, one got there earlier, he went in, he's just going about his business, so there he is. Then a little later in the evening, his friend arrives, that friend is coming in. The first friend who's arrived is over there standing, say, behind a podium. The second friend doesn't see the first friend, but the first friend sees the second friend. Are we together? Everyone all right? All right, so in other words, the one that's already there is going to watch this other one come in, and the one coming in doesn't know that his friend is there, right? So we have the perfect setup. That other friend sees as this friend comes into the room. This is what that first friend experiences. He watches him. He watches him come in, and he says to himself, "Oh yeah, watch this." And he sees his friend walk in, and he sees his friend scanning the room, and the first friend's going, "Yep, I know what's going on right now." And then he sees that second friend go, "Dish, there he is." Boom, he's off walking that direction. All of a sudden, "Shh, sunshine, how are you doing?" He sees that conversation begin. And the first friend just says to himself, "That's my boy." Period. He knew exactly what was going to happen. Is there a greater joy than seeing your friend do something of such simple but powerful human goodness? And you experience it as your own. But you know the remarkable thing? That first guy, when he came in the room, did the exact same thing, but he didn't get to watch himself do it. You don't watch yourself do good actions and say, "Watch this one. This is going to be good." But with your friend, you do. I'm convinced that's what Aristotle means when he says you can see, you can delight in the actions of your friend better than you can even in your own. This just gives a little window into the incredible richness of what they're calling convivere, that human happiness, he's this bold, Aristotle is, necessarily includes that. What would be his philosophical argument for that? It would be simply this. You having a true friend, you will naturally crave to be with and see that person do good. You will feel something missing if you're not. Well, happiness never has anything missing in it. Full human happiness must include that. There's Aristotle's argument for you. This brings us to the central role in friends, convivere. That's of course Latin. That's St. Thomas's word. Central to human convivere most of all is conversation. So I'm just going to do this quickly and in passing. A number of these points, I hope, by the way, if there's any questions at the end here, I'd love to discuss. I never tire of discussing these things. Be happy to go into a little more detail, try to share a little bit more about whatever point you'd like to focus on. For them, the most characteristic way that friends are together is through having good conversation. I'll give you a little quotation from St. Thomas on his commentary on the ethics is here under On the Conversation of Friends. "Consequently, as a person rejoices in the perception of his own existence and life, so it's simply necessary for him to perceive them in his friend in order to rejoice in him," in a sense, in him too. "This takes place through constant association in the exchange of ideas and reflection. In this way, men," and of course the sense there is humans, human persons, are said to dwell with one another in an appropriate manner, not as cattle feeding together, but as human beings living a life that is proper to them. I love this point. What is proper human being together? What's proper life? He says cattle can live together by feeding together. The life of cattle is not really anything more than that which is involved in the feeding. So if you have cattle that are feeding together, they are living together. What, ladies and gentlemen, constitutes human living together? This to me is the central issue. And to be honest, I think if we looked around in Charlottesville, if we looked around at UVA, what really, to anyone who is alive and reflective about life at all, what allows us to live with another human being? What does living together ever really mean? What would ever really constitute being able to be with someone? Maybe a little provocative with you. If people love one another, they want to be together, right? Here's a very important life question. What do people want to do when they love one another? How can humans actually be together? What does being together as human beings mean? This is at the absolute epicenter of things. I love considering this in the context of talking to other people who are married. Certainly something our age might do well to think more about, where we seem to be struggling through as a society. What would constitute marriage or not in any case, and what is involved in one being reasonably successful? What enables two people really to live one life? In any case, I give you, at the center of answering that question, according to Aristotle and Aquinas, is the notion of conversation. Real conversation. What constitutes real conversation? This raises all kinds of great questions. Ladies and gentlemen, what is there to talk about anyway? Is a great question. If there's not much to talk about, then there's what exactly would human life together be? I love how Aristotle just always brings us back to the most root issues. So what great issue does that raise? The art of conversation. Perhaps the lost art of conversation. Where are the people who know how to have real conversations? Where are the contexts to have those conversations? Is an incredibly great practical issue that we could talk about. One other quick thing here. This raises a greater issue of what enables us to be able to do this whole friendship thing anyway. One thing that I hope comes through in for Aristotle and Aquinas is exactly what they want to come through. Friendship is as arduous as human life itself. One can only do as well at friendship as one is doing well at human life itself. Only to the extent are we virtuous will we be able to live together well. Only to the extent that we have certain intellectual dispositions and have a certain interior conversation and a certain willingness to have an exterior conversation will we be able to have friendship. All right. I now wrap up with looking very quickly at friendship with Christ, and then I'll close. I would like to just use this raises really everything. The guts of what I just did there were just kind of straight up Aristotle philosophy. All right, now I'm going to pan out. I'm going to go explicitly Christian and just say, to what extent can you have friendship with Christ? Just to be clear to me, this is one of the most dramatic things in the history of thought. Aristotle, the master of friendship, asks explicitly the question, perhaps you know this, it's worth reminding ourselves of. Aristotle explicitly asks, can you be friendship with God? And he says, absolutely not. Why not? For one very simple reason. He has such a strong notion of what friendship is. Friendship requires sharing a life together. And quite directly, he would say, and who would think he can share a life with God? So no, you cannot be friends with God. So that's always a rather dramatic moment when my students, you know, say, okay, so, you know, in something really important, Aristotle's wrong, right? I mean, I ask them, I ask a Christian, do you think that Aristotle was wrong? Knowing what he knows, based upon everything you know by the light of natural reason, can you be friends with God? Based upon his profound understanding of friendship as sharing a life together, can you be friends with God? It seems to me there's not a real good case for saying that Aristotle is wrong. The only basis for Christians holding that you can have a friendship with God would be based upon something that Aristotle had no way of knowing, namely a divine revelation where something's going to be done to change the situation about whether you can share a life with God or not. So let us, if you would, just peek very quickly at our Lord's words on friendship in St. John's chapter 15. I hope you don't think I'm being impious if I say to you, as I say to my students, in all honesty, I think if we read these words carefully, we'll see that our Lord understood friendship in the same way that Aristotle did. No longer do I call you servants, for the servant does not know what his master is doing. Pause. That's an incredibly remarkable content assertion right there. It's asserting a philosophy of friendship. I suggest to you a philosophy of friendship that Aristotle himself holds. No longer do I call you servants, for the servant does not know what his master is doing. Of course, if he doesn't know, then you can't be in it together. So they can't be sharing one life. The master and the servant do not share one life. But I have called you friends, for all that I have heard from my Father, I have made known to you. Remarkable assertion that I will call you a friend because I have established a basis of conversation with you. This is where I suggest he is expressing precisely what Aristotle's understanding of friendship is. It is in convivere. It is in living together one life. It is in having shared dispositions, which most of all play themselves out in an intimate union of sharing hearts and minds in conversation. I have called you friends for all that I have heard from my Father, I have made known to you. This is, I think, the most important thing that I'm going to say this evening, namely next up here, this line, to try to add just a little bit more to this to connect it back to what we've been seeing. I think we can say as Christians, now in a context to understand it better, in view of what we've said here about friendship, God wills that we grow in virtue. God wills that we grow in holiness. He wills that we grow in sanctity, precisely so that we can live one life with him. This is, to me, the absolute center of Christianity, understanding what we so much struggle at times when the commandments are so difficult to follow. Why does God ask this of me? Why does God ask this of me? And others look at Christianity from the outside. Where does this code of morality come from? Well, I say to you, what in any case would be St. Thomas Aquinas' answer to that, based upon, I think, Aristotle's understanding of friendship. The reason that there are commandments is because they are precisely the words of a friend conveying how to be his friend. And I say that in no kind of Hallmark card kind of way. This is in the most deeply kind of philosophical way. The basic principle, a line that I haven't said to you that's at the heart of everything that Aristotle says about friends, there's so many great little one-liners that he has. Friends have the same likes and dislikes. If at root you don't have the same likes and dislikes as a person, you can't share one life with that person. It can be minor differences. There can't be major differences in likes and dislikes, for then you cannot be at one with that person. So, St. Thomas's understanding of what Christian friendship means is to have transformed our own hearts so that we literally have the same likes and dislikes as God himself. I'd just like to close by circling back to where we began and skip the cool quotation I have there for about praying for friends. Maybe we can read that to you in the question and answer. I'm going to circle back and close by giving you again St. Augustine. We read it earlier, but now I want to focus on it once more. This is right after St. Thomas has said, in heaven you could be perfectly happy with God alone, but rather obviously we know there are going to be others there, and you will be with human friends in heaven. So how does St. Augustine try to express how important that other friendship with humans would be, now that, of course, the divine friendship completely fulfills one? Would these fade into absolute insignificance? Would they have any place at all anymore? Again, what does St. Thomas's teacher, St. Augustine, say? I'll give you the whole sentence. Spiritual creatures receive no other interior aid to happiness than the eternity, truth, and charity of the Creator. But if they can be said to be helped from without, in other words, is there something that comes from without, not to the beatific vision itself, which constitutes their happiness, is there something that could in some way be added on to this? Perhaps it's only by this, that they see one another, they turn to their human friends, even in the beatific vision, and rejoice together in God at their fellowship. Do you hear what St. Augustine is saying? The astounding thought of, while one would be completely filled with the beatific vision, that as this incredible add-on, what else can I say, the turn to your friend and rejoice that you have one another, and see that is part and parcel of the gift that God has given to you, then you rejoice that you have been given one another too, even while you have this. So I close. What would it be like when you have that experience? I quote, I end with the line of J.R.R. Tolkien's short story, which is my absolute favorite short stories, Leaf by Niggle, where the final sentence is, and they laughed, and the mountains rang with it. Thank you very much.